Hello and welcome to a spooky edition of the Shop Talk Show. I am Count Davula, and with me is Chris Franken-Chris. Yes. Hey, Chris Franken-Chris.
I'd like everyone to know that Dave has tried this several times now, and I've changed monsters each time.
Yes, you are a shapeshifter. Welcome to the spooky edition.
That's great. Well,
it's almost Halloween here in the States. You know,
next episode will be even closer, really.
My wonderful wife, my wonderful wife bought a giant Beetlejuice sandworm, and it's blown up in my front yard.
Kick butt, so, really? Oh my gosh.
It's like 10, 15 feet tall. It's pretty great.
I wonder if which would win, it or like one of the worms from Tremors.
Oh, okay. This is all right. I wasn't prepared for movie trivia, but here we go.
Well, just think about it. We don't have to go there. I was thinking that you'd call me like a zombie or something because I eat the heads off of CMSs.
Oh, yes. Yes. He loves the brains part of the CMS.
Or the spectrum of monsters. I think that's going to come up in this episode. I think just through natural, some stuff I'm thinking about and some of the nature of some of these questions is like, what's up with CMSs and stuff? And I saw this like list of headless CMSs somehow, some way the other day. Headless. Even I've done that kind of
spooky
thing in the past.
That sounds very spooky. Yes. Do I need to keep talking like this?
Yes. Yes, okay. You do. And, you know, they all have kind of different purposes, like monsters have different purposes. You know, they have different goals for their monstering, in a way. Oh, gosh. You know, we got this question because Russell Heimlich wrote in about Expression Engine. They had tweeted that they were bought again. They were most recently bought by some company who's known for AI, which is weird. So, like, an AI company buying a CMS was kind of weird. And now they are bought again, but by some company that makes products for Expression Engine. I don't know.
Or Packet Tide, I guess.
We haven't talked about Expression Engine in a while because it seems like feels like it's been long dead. Now I'm, you know,
yeah,
in a weird situation. It's like I worked in an office with Kraft, and like the Expression Engine ex-CEO worked here too and worked for Kraft also, and it was just like kind of like, really? There's a lot more Kraft talk around here than Expression Engine, but Expression Engine still exists,
you know.
I
think it's good for Expression Engine. I feel like if you built on it, you know, back in the day, like I feel like Ellis Lab we're not good custodians of the property. And maybe they should have, like, they had a hard time getting to this, like, Expression Engine 2, I think it was what it was. And then it like, got stalled out, and then, like, you know, but it was kind of, like, secret, you know, because it was their product or whatever. Which I think this happens.
Well, it's open source now. That's significant.
Yeah, I think that happens in proprietary CMS land, you know. Or like, single-sourced company. But, you know, like, the screenshot on this, we should, expressionengine.com/blog, Expression Engine has a new owner. The screenshots on here are awesome. Like, it looks cool and modern, and I would consider using it. Just based on this screenshot. I mean, obviously you take one more step and CMSs go.
But I look at immediate and be like, oh yeah, sidebar as main nav. Because that was like a step we made at CodePen. In a little bit based on trend, a little, you know, like that's how Spotify is. And there's so many apps and Notion and, you know, where, you know, you kind of explore like nested content with the sidebar as the main nav. And I kind of like it. So there.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good first step, right? Like make it look like an app or, you know, a familiar. You get the free drill down too with the sidebar now. Like if you want to like put a secondary nav like in the view that loads, like you get another, like you get a free drill down kind of
thing. Maybe like there's something about the aspect ratio of screens, because I feel like if you put a fixed position top bar, there's a certain people out there, I've met them, that are like, I hate this, like, please don't chew into my screen real estate with your fixed top bar.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, you fix the sidebar, nobody cares.
Everyone,
you
know. It.
But maybe it's because it chews up space that's not as as useful because you have more horizontal space.
What's fun? I would be curious, like, where this first showed up. Because, I mean, was it the iPad? I mean, remember when, like, Steve Jobs, like, rotated the iPad for the first time and then all of a sudden Mail has a sidebar or whatever, you know, or Twitter? Or
whatever. Sure, like, yeah.
I mean...
Oh, yeah, Twitter's like this now, too, isn't it? The main nav.
Yeah, I guess so. And then, but always the Twitter iPad app or whatever was like that. But I don't know. It's anyway, the new expression in it looks good. I think, like, it would be back on my potential consider list. No slight to them, but Craft, though, it seems so far ahead right now. I would have
a
hard time.
Yeah, like on a greenfield
time.
Project, why the hell would you pick expression? Like, that's why I don't care. Like, why would I pick one of the... Of course I would pick Craft. That would be weird to pick. But I like that it has some new momentum. Maybe for the people that built on it a long time ago, like you were saying, now they have an upgrade path and, you know, right? Like, they don't have to, like, burn the world down in order to... They feel like there's... future for them. That's cool.
Because I have a client who's on a less than, it's an enterprise CMS, but it's a less than ideal situation, you know? But like, so it's hard to use. It's bad. It's like some weird Bootstrap Angular thing or whatever, you know, but like if they showed me a screenshot of the next gen of it and it looked like this, I would be like, oh, okay, we can use this for another 5-10 years, you know, like,
right on.
You just need, like, you just need a little bit of vision, a little bit of like, hey, this is kind of where we're going, like, and then you can be like, oh, okay, I could be into that, you know. But it's important, you know. I think we've said this for years on the show. You go back to our FAQ or whatever, we probably have addressed this, but like CMSs aren't just the code, the database slinger, you know, it's a community too, because the community comes with all the plugins, with all the support, with all the every, you know, WordPress, great community, Craft, great community. And like, Craft is different than WordPress because they're like, no, you pay for stuff and that supports the developers. You know, they're going to be around. They're not just going to, you know, you're not going to have plugin rot, you know, that often, you know, so. Anyway, I think, like, you know, the different communities and the different models, like, that affects technology choices, you know? So
I think that'll come up with other questions that we have coming up here, picking popular or less popular things here. But just to stick on the CMS thing for a moment, and we had another user right in here. I like to call him user. You're not our users.
You're a listener. Shopomaniacs. You're Shopomaniacs.
Jill Francois wrote in about us. Statamic, and did we actually do a full show on Statamic at one point? Or
I don't
Statamic?
Know. I know we had Bastion from Kirby, which I put
right.
in the same-ish
bucket. I think it's spiritually a little connected to Kirby because these are like CMSs that are that share some similarities with static site generators, but aren't really. They're really called flat file CMSs, which I can see how that is confusing as heck, and it confused me for a long time. But the idea is that a static site generator is just like, it is what it is. It doesn't, it has, runs no server side code whatsoever. There's no PHP that follows a static site, statically site generated site. No server side languages involved, but there could be on a flat file site, and there is on Statamic and Kirby. So it's kind of like, I think it enables some things that you almost like assume that a CMS can do. Like, for example, you're viewing a list of posts, you know, not the whole post, but just like the title and an excerpt or something. And you're like, you know what? I'd like to like view that sorted the opposite direction, you know? So if you're going to do that on a static site, you'd have to like, I don't know, pre-generate the files that were sorted that, you know, different ways and then show previously, you know, already rendered pages that are sorted that way, which is just weird and not a particularly disk efficient way to do things. So a flat file CMS would be like, no problem. I'll use my PHP code to do that for you because it totally can do that, you know,
in milliseconds, like microseconds. It's just like, bloop.
Yeah, right. So you just get some more possibilities in that way, but still a lot of the benefit of you still don't have a database, you know, so that's still kind of cool. Anyway, look into it. I don't know. There's we don't have to do a whole expose on. We're not prepared to do that anyway. But it got me thinking about this list of headless CMSs I saw the other day, quote unquote, headless CMSs.
Ooh, sounds spooky. Ooh.
Did you see my little thing there? I know this doesn't make for good radio, but I kind of like to help my brain sort it out. I made like a table of CMSs that at least, most of these somehow could be considered headless. And like at the very top, it's just like Contentful. That's like a lot of people have heard of, big service. It's headless for sure, because it literally, the definition of headless is it has no like themes, right? There's no like Contentful themes. Maybe companies out there try to tell you that there is because they're trying to sell you something to use in that way. Mm-hmm. But it'd probably be like a Gatsby theme that then connects to Contentful, So Contentful itself has no, it's headless, just data only.
Headless is like a first class, like a
yeah.
Like you, it just has an API built in. And so.
That's it, right? And Contentful is only cloud-hosted, too. You have to go to Contentful.com to use it. So I think it's probably the most quintessential classic headless CMS, mm-hmm. period. Like, that's the one. But there's Sanity also. Super similar. Mm-hmm. We've had those guys on the show. It's also cloud-hosted, but it's just a little bit different. If you kind of self-host the admin area of it, weirdly enough, the data is still on Sanity, and that's where you, like, access the data from, but the little GUI for changing that data, if you need it or want it, is kind of like weirdly self-hosted, and you access via APIs, and it's very JSON heavy and such. So it's a lot like Contentful, but just different. There's just clear differences there. But they're both very firmly, to me, headless CMSs. Mm-hmm. Then there's like, okay, those are cloud hosted. What if I want nothing to do with cloud? I want to host it. Because I just do, in the same way I might want to host a craft site or a WordPress site or whatever. Mm-hmm. I want to host this, but I want to embrace the headlessness of it. Because part of embracing headlessness is allowing me to say, I want to evolve my front end however I want to evolve it. Change technologies, take advantage of the best ideas of front end, and have it have nothing to do with where my data lives. And likewise, I want my data over here so it can evolve without having to worry about the front end too much. I mean, of course, they need to talk to each other and, it's still a complicated dance together, but they're not as tied at the hip as a headed CMS would be. So there's stuff like Keystone or whatever, Strappy, Cockpit, that are like NPM install CMS kind of. And I'm in those, that means that they're kind of Node or JavaScript based, but there's versions of this kind of thing in other languages as well. But those are also headless CMSs. They're just different philosophy in that they're self-hosted.
I was going to say, I think a few shows ago or half a dozen shows ago now, we like, what's the easiest way, the Greenfield episode, that's it. But like, what's the easiest way to get a GraphQL API up and running, and I think we are like Rails maybe, or something. But a lot of people wrote back and were like Keystone. And I was like, literally never heard of it. I'm such an old man now. But I guess other people just hang out on more hacker news sites than I do. But
right.
But it's
well, it looks great.
It looks good. That's... And so I just wanted to say thanks for sending that my way. It is like V0.5.0, which is like, not for me and my clients right now. But like,
sure.
But it did like look very cool. So I just want to say thanks.
I mean, there's a lot of the tweets on their homepage are from 2016. So they've been around a minute, and they still are gainfully employing people I know. So it looks good in that regard. One notable thing about it is, as best I can tell, it has no admin API. It is like code only.
Which is plus and minus. I mean, like.
Interesting, right? But if you look at Strappy or something, it's similar. And then it's like install and self-host your own kind of JavaScript powered headless CMS with GraphQL and all that stuff. And it has an admin to it. So if you like the Contentful kind of thing, you got that going on too. So you might prefer that Keystone doesn't have an admin because it's just less crap or whatever. Fine, but I don't know. I would lean towards things that have some kind of API for managing content. I mean, that's to me kind of the point of headless CMS. And if I didn't need any admin at all, I'd probably lean toward a static site generator situation.
I will write raw PostgreSQL, just raw SQL, man. That's the feel. Miss those days. So, everything was better back then.
So I feel like that's the top of the head of this headless stuff, is all these services, cloud hosted or self hosted, mm-hmm. that are like intended to be like, we are headless CMSs.
Yeah.
But then there's this whole like middle category of CMSs that just like can be used that way. So WordPress has APIs that you can hit, and GraphQL plugins and stuff. Yeah. And it's because WordPress is so big, you see a decent amount of it happening.
Right.
Drupal has REST APIs too. You could use both of these apps, throw them up on a server somewhere, and use it as a headless CMS. And people do it for sure. But like, it's not technically in the headless CMS bucket. You don't see it talked about in that way. And maybe for good reason, I don't know. You know, it's still funny. Like, if you're going to do all this work and then you still have to like maintain some server side app somewhere, it's kind of like a little extra overhead, perhaps.
I'm sure we'll get like, but I run, you know, WordPress API, you know, but like, I think most instances of the whatever 20-30% of the internet out there right now are probably like a single instance or multi-user or something, or multi, you know, site that's just purely like WordPress themes folder, you know? So it's not doing the whole headless situation. So
yeah,
the neat thing, I guess, about that is you can kind of have both, I guess, right? Like you get both worlds. So you could start hitting your API from,
hey, that's a
your
good
theme folder. Yeah. So that's maybe a cool thing. Like,
if you can't go all in, maybe some pages of your site could be rendered in that way. Yeah. If you want to, yeah.
Like a live search would be like the first thing I think of, you know, like a,
oh, sure. Yeah. That's a great idea. Well, then there's, you know, so, you know, to mention WordPress and Craft together isn't unheard of, because it's like they're both PHP, they're both MySQL. You both need to spin up some server side thing to run it. Craft maybe starting to move a little ahead in the headless department, because they're saying, you know, we have straight up offer a GraphQL API now, because we know that's what people working in this way want.
Mm-hmm.
And have announced this Craft Cloud product, which is, we don't even have to self-host it. We'll host an instance of Craft for you and give you APIs. Now, it's not available yet, but you can just see that them moving in that direction more than you see WordPress move in that direction. Okay. So that's that. And then there's these, like, you know, people say a headless CMS. Oh, like Forestry or Netlify CMS in a way. And to me, those like live in this like little weird bubble, kind of related, but not. For some reason, my head doesn't go like, oh, yeah, those are headless CMSs, only because both of them, and I'm talking again about Netlify CMS and Forestry, don't help you with your data. They help you with your data, but they don't store your data. They're like, store your data somewhere else.
Yeah.
And we'll give you this admin UI on top of it. And I could see looking at these things and being like, no, these are CMSs. Like, who cares where the data goes? These are in the same category. These are headless CMSs in a way.
They almost start looping, like with Netlify CMS, it starts looping back around like to the two things like Statamic or Kirby, you know, where like it just produces a flat file, you know, like it dumps into your Git repo though, or whatever. Like,
that's a good point. Why can't you use Netlify CMS with Kirby? I'm sure you could. Like, because all Netlify CMS cares about is like folders of markdown files, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it, you point it at your markdown files, or you literally configure it to be like, here's where my markdown files are, and here's what basically the front matter and content of those markdown files is. And I think Forestry is the same way.
And then it commits a Git commit, and then it Netlify is like, oh, you committed a Git commit? Oh, I'll just rebuild it. Like, it doesn't care. That's great. Like, that's
it is cool. So those are heavily Git based, and you know, Netlify CMS is sort of like self hosted, and that it's just a like single page app that you toss on your site and connect it via client side stuff mostly. And I think Forestry is more cloud hosted. So there is the separation there. But you see how we're painting this whole spectrum of love headless CMSs from that all kind of have different choices and philosophies.
This is a really good
and
chart you got,
yeah. And then there's stuff that just isn't. You know, like think of Joomla. You used to back in the day on this show, if we were going to mention a CMS, we'd say, you know, a CMS like WordPress, Drupal, or Joomla. They were like, there was like the trifecta of, and Joomla's, you know, I think they had a release just this month. So it's not like dead, but like, it's kind of, you know,
like 2.3.
People don't think of it a lot. You know, it's like for the Joomla lovers out there or whatever. I don't see a ton of new development happening. I could be absolutely wrong. So call me an asshole or whatever, but it's not, they haven't moved in the direction of Jamstacky stuff. I don't think they have native APIs for accessing content of, you know, Joomla stored stuff. It just isn't that type of CMS anymore. So it's self-hosted, it's PHP and MySQL and all that, but it's just headed. It's just not a headless CMS. Neither are things that you, that I don't know if people use them in the word CMS. They often think of them as a site builder, but Webflow or Squarespace or Wix or whatever, I'm sure all three of those things think of themselves as very, very different, and they are. But they're also not headless CMSs. They're just not a part of the spectrum, or they're just not part of the spectrum.
Right. Your authoring tool and your templating tool are tied together. The Wix, Squarespace, Webflow is interesting because they also have like heavy visual editors in mixed in, you know? So, you know, is that another class of, you know, cause in my brain, I maybe do put those in a different class, like just sort of like, what am I going to recommend to people who are new to websites or something, or don't want to maintain a bunch of sites, you know, or write the code for it? Mm-hmm. It's like, just, here's Squarespace, sign up. Let me know when you're done.
Oh, yeah. Does it have a place in the world? Heck yeah, it does. Webflow, just, I'm about to publish a video in the next couple of weeks, I think, of me talking with the Webflow gang about wrapping my head around it more and more. I mean, of course, they're very convinced that this is the absolute future of all websites, and I don't have a crystal ball, so can't tell that exactly. And but it is compelling. I know you've used it probably more than I have.
We did a Webflow site for a client, and you know, it was maybe some time ago, so I, you know,
yeah,
grain of salt here. Your experience or mileage may vary, but it was good, and because the client was like, we want to tweak. Does that make sense? Do you know that feeling where they just like, we're going to change the headline every day, we're going to move this little, you know, paragraph or testimony over here, you know, we are going to do this, you know? So that was like the discovery. That was the design brief. That was like basically, you know, and they felt locked in by the previous vendor, like where they had to like submit an RFP or, you know, and do like a 2-week, you know, like reserve, you know, to change a testimony on their website. They had to like get time on some agency's calendar from 2 weeks from now, you know? So that wasn't working for them either. So we were like, well, let's try this Webflow thing. It's like entirely visual. You can drag and drop and move things around. And we built out some pretty good components. Like it felt really good. It worked really well, but like what happened was, you know, at first it was, they were going to do all of the updates, but as you can imagine, people get busy and then they just email us and say, can you update the Webflow, you know? And so now us very good web designers are having to like kind of munge around in a visual tool just to like move a paragraph up or whatever. And so it became a burden for us at some point. So like it was great for like, it was going to accomplish the goals of what the client said they wanted. But then in reality, we would have been better off probably with a Jekyll, just something we could all work on and just hammer out in a blink of an eye. So I hate to be that way, but that was probably how it should have gone. So
I'm sure you're not alone in that sentiment.
This episode is brought to you by CloudBees Rollout. CloudBees Rollout is where developers come to ship changes at will. When you have a solution to manage feature flags at scale, you're empowered to continuously and intelligently roll out changes as soon as they are code complete on any platform, even mobile. Decouple development from code releases for real-time change control, roll back only the changes you want, toggle features, and use multivariate flags for A/B testing and nix misbehaving features with a kill switch. Check out the 14-day free trial and experience how CloudBees Rollout can help you rock every release. Follow the link in the show notes or in your podcast player right now, or visit rollout.io. Our thanks to CloudBees Rollout for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
Just because we're talking about CMSs, though, part of this that I guess I was vaguely aware of in Webflow, but during this, like, you know, sponsored promo videos working on with them, it all kind of clicked for me in that when things are so, I think a CMS that's as integrated and tied into this ecosystem, which is so tight like theirs is, the concept of a CMS gets really interesting. Like, they show me this demo of this, like, music blog kind of thing. You know, there's pages, and of course, that's a CMS because you need to be able to be like, I'm going to make a new entry. I'm going to review a new album, and this is the name of the album, and this is the URL where you can buy it, and this is my 5-star rating, and these are 3 paragraphs of my review and an excerpt and whatever. Like, of course, you need to, like, design those fields. Any one of these CMSs that we've talked about, that's the idea. You have to do some content modeling to figure out what you need. All these CMSs can do it. And in Webflow, you do it too. You open up this, like, items or groups, you know, they have some vernacular for it. And you drag in fields and be like, these are the things that I need. Great, done. And it feels very satisfying because it's, you know, it's a little bit like using, like, advanced custom fields in WordPress or something, you know, maybe even easier, really. And then you're like, okay, that was easy. Cool, cool, cool. And then you, like, go to the visual builder tool and it exposes those fields for you. So you can be like, oh, where do I want my 4-star rating route? I'm just going to, like, drag it onto the page. Okay, it's there now. Mm-hmm. That was easy. Cool. You know, I don't have to, like, think of how, oh, what did I name that field so I can use, you know, curly bracket, name, underscore, album, curly bracket. No, you don't have to think about that. You just drag it in there. And then they have, so, okay, and then you build the site that way and you enter data and you munge around with it. But then they have this view for clients that's like, they don't have to, like, log into Webflow. I feel like I'm doing a freaking ad for them. Sorry, this is not sponsored, but it's compelling in a CMS type of way. And that's what we're talking about anyway. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the site and because it knows exactly your templates and your data, and it's such a tight ecosystem, there's, like, little pencils on all of the, like, icons on all the data, and you can just, like, click the pencil and edit the data right on the front end of the site if you want. Yeah. Or you can, like, open up this bottom bar and edit it in more of, like, a back end kind of environment for adding new data and editing more, you know, with a, you know, just text areas and, you know, bold and italic buttons and all that stuff you'd expect. So it's kind of like best of both worlds that I feel like a lot of CMSs can't always pull off really super well, mm-hmm. because they're not as tightly coupled as this is. Mm-hmm. That kind of, like, edit on the front or edit on the back. And to go from, like, I need a new field, let me hop into my CMS, add the field, you know, quickly go add some data to whatever posts I need and then drag it into a template where I need it. That, like, it was like a 2-minute process. And I'm like, holy crap, that's, like, a little more difficult, I'd say, on other CMSs, you know, or a hand-rolled CMS. God forbid you're running migrations.
Yeah, well, and, like, I think we've all installed the WordPress plugin that tries to do that for you, and it goes very bad, very, very fast bad. But this is, you know, Webflow mostly just works, I'd say, you know, even Square. Yeah. Like,
it's good. I think it's cool, especially, you know, if it's the future, fine. But it's very cool now for people that certain type of situations that want to build in it. I think it's pretty cool. But notice that you're there. You build it. You're not going. I mean, you can export it, and I guess you could munge around with it and move it to some other system. That's really not what it's for. They want you to build it and just stay there and not incorporate anything third party. Nothing. And it's just a tight ecosystem.
Yeah, I appreciated that they gave you an out. Like, they're like, here, download your site. Good luck. Because I guess it sort of is like a static site generator. It'll generate the pages. And you know, I it could be totally different now, like Reactiverse sort of stuff. But like, I felt like the class names it was generating and the like CSS it was generating, I felt like that was stuff I could handle if I had to, like, bail out. Like, I felt like it was pretty, like, responsible, or I could kind of work with it. So, you know, again, your mileage may vary, but I had a decent time, but it was for this idea of like a kind of a high needs client. That sounds terrible, but in that they wanted to like kind of continuously update the site and make dozens of changes a month, not just like a dozen changes a year. So yeah, you gotta, that's, I don't know, like when you procure CMSs or work with clients or whatever, like that's something you have to kind of know up front. It's like, how often are you updating this? Is this an everyday thing? Is this an every week thing or an every month thing or an every quarter thing? And you gotta really like, whatever, double it, add 32, I guess, because the estimate there is always like way, or, you know, it's always this like, if we had the new CMS, oh, we'll use it every second of every day. Well, every minute deploys, you know, and it's not how it works, because it doesn't, they don't. So even load balancing would be kind of interesting. Not to, I'm blowing the scope of your site, but like how, you know, like, does it have built-in caching? What is that situation? Because, you know, WordPress, you get 25 simultaneous hits, it falls over. So, like, what do? You know, like, you have to bring your own caching layer. And so maybe that's easy, but maybe you need dedicated hosting, you know? Same with Craft, technically, you know? Yeah. Like, you know, static sites, less, you know, if you're on a CDN, so...
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So, you know, with this headless CMS thing, I wanted to like paint this picture of like totally quintessentially headless to absolutely not headless and everything in between. There's sort of a way that you can think about that with static file hosting too, in that there's like apps that are like quintessential static site hosts, like GitHub Pages or an S3 bucket or our everybody's favorite Netlify. These are like, this is what we do. Netlify the most, I'd say. They're like, this is how we think of ourselves. This is like the thing that we do. We're a static file host. We don't want you to feel limited in that way. I mean, that's, we've talked about that a bunch of times, but like they're a static file host. That's what they do. But then there's like, in an S3 bucket isn't necessarily to host websites. It's usually not for that. It's usually for who knows what else, avatar uploads and PDFs from your weird government app or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And then GitHub Pages is like in the middle. It really is for your website. But, you know, they in the early days, it was like, put your Jekyll site here was kind of the vibe of it. And it'll even run your Jekyll site for you. But that's all it does. You know, it doesn't, I don't know, they have GitHub Actions these days. So I guess that story is kind of changing. But those are like quintessentially, and they're like, these are static file hosts. And you would go with a static file host because, for example, it's like the chances are of them seeing like, oh, it's CDN back too, is that's a big deal. That's great. Really, you get a CDN for all of your stuff. And we have maybe like atomic deploys like Netlify has that. Wow, what a wonderful thing, because we can just point you to this little bucket where we stored your last deployment. And then there's like in-betweeny stuff. I don't know if I've painted the spectrum quite right, but there used to be this app called DivShot. Remember that? Where you just like drag a folder of crap on it and you would deploy it. That was kind of a static site generator. And then that turned into Firebase hosting. So you don't really think of Firebase as this. You think of Firebase largely as like a real-time data store. But I know they have auth. They have all kinds of products now. But they have hosting too, and it's static and CDN-backed. So that's cool. Cloudflare just released their Cloudflare Sites thing. Did you see that? That's totally static.
Right.
Because it's like static files on the edge.
Yeah, which they know how to do that. So
yeah. I was, you know, and then I was like, okay, so these are all like a lot modern things and such, you know. But I was like looking around trying to research this, and I came across, you know, everybody remembers GeoCities, right?
Yeah.
But do you remember NeoCities?
Uh-oh. Whoa, what?
Look at it right now. I don't know if it has the same, because what it does is it just dumps you, it gives you static files, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and a little editor right within the site. It has a free version, or the paid version is like $5. And you only need that if you know pretty specific stuff like high traffic. It's CDN backed. It's static files. It's like a tiny little, like, it's kind of like CodePen plus Netlify together. Kind of, I almost like don't want to tell people about it because it's actually like really cool.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like just DIY, do whatever you want. And then your published site is like whatever, dave.neocities.com. And it's EOCs. Totally Jamstack. It's totally a static file host.
Oh, I'm got frickin' some MIDI here. You want to hear this? I'll put a link and I'll have Chris batch it in there. So,
and people use it for that spirit. Like, I'm going to build a weird personal site that's just my, you know, just as me as it can be, which I love. But I feel like it deserves a place on the static file host spectrum, you know. And then there's like traditional hosting, like DigitalOcean, or I don't know. That's not fair because you can do all kinds of weird stuff on DigitalOcean. But like Bluehost or HostGator or MediaTemple or GoDaddy, all these. They're not really static file hosts, other than you can spin up a host on it and totally put a bunch of static files on it and just host them. So they are, in a sense, a static file host in that there's nothing preventing you from just doing all static stuff on them. They're just not generally in that bucket because they don't do anything above and beyond that is unlocked because it's a static-only file host. Like, there's no CDN in front of it, and there's no fancy static only stuff going on. So it's also a spectrum. Anyway.
This episode is brought to you by Phrase.com. Do you have a digital product that you've always wanted to bring to a global audience? With Phrase, it's now easier than ever before. Phrase is the translation management platform that makes localizing your app, website, or other designs into multiple languages a breeze. One of the biggest hurdles with localization is inefficient communication and sending around content in seemingly endless email threads or spreadsheets. With so many people involved, translators, developers, product managers, designers, this lack of a workflow can lead to a total communication breakdown. Phrase brings everyone together and allows for a streamlined localization process, all in one place. It's easy to integrate into your existing workflow. You can work with Phrase directly from your favorite tools with no more need for copying and pasting. For example, are you a big fan of working in Sketch? Now you can use the Phrase Sketch plugin and pull translated content directly into your artboard. Leverage tons of great features like a versatile translation editor, strong API, branching, over-the-air translations, and much more to make your localization life as easy as possible. Adding one language to your digital products might be easy. Adding 20 isn't. With Phrase, going global becomes possible. It's time to literally speak the same language as your potential customers or users, starting today. You can get a 14-day free trial that gives you access to all the Phrase features you need to bring your products to a global audience. Just visit phrase.com, phrase.com/shoptalk to get your free Phrase trial. That's phrase.com/shoptalk to get your free trial. Our thanks to Phrase for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
You have a good breakdown here. When you're choosing a CMS, it's usually just this big lump, right? Like, you're just like, what do I, well, I heard Keystone was cool, so I'm just going to use that or whatever, you know? So how, I think like you almost do need to sit back and be like, what features do we need? And like, can this meet our objective? You know? I mean, there's even weird features, you know, like, branching and stuff like that, like content branching or editor flow, you know, editorial flow, like,
yeah,
you know, I think you've talked about like multi-user, like authors, right? Like, can't just have an author, you know, hot push a new post to CSS tricks. It has to go through an editor first, you know, like
there almost needs to be like a wizard, right? Like, do you need multiple authors? Which technology do you like better? You know?
Yeah.
PHP and handlebars or React and Vue or whatever, you know?
Right, right.
And then do you need, you know, like it almost needs to ask you like 10 questions about what you prefer and what you need. And then mm-hmm. you land on one of these things, you know? We don't need to take as much time on it, but I think that the static site generator market is like this too. There's not just static site generators and then there's 15 of them and you're just like, I don't know, that one looks fast and you pick it. There's all kinds of stuff. Like, what language are they written in? I guess that usually isn't a big consideration, but it kind of is, because if it's Ruby and you're on some weird setup and Ruby sucks to install, but, you know, Node runs fast and it runs everywhere, so maybe that's a consideration. But, you know, I saw this list and it was just like, well, just pick a static site generator at like, you know, like 11T or Gatsby. And you look at a list like, and you're like, those, they are really different. They're really different. You know, one of them is like all in on React and GraphQL, and then it's a static site generator, kinda, but it hydrates itself to be a, you know, I'm talking about Gatsby in this case, to be like more of a single page app kind of situation, which is very far different philosophically than something like 11D, which is just like, I don't know, we just like process your HTML templates. That's it.
Yeah.
So there's a spectrum there too. Like you don't just like pick one of these things and roll. You got to like look at what you need and what you want and what the philosophy is and what the languages are involved.
What your team is capable of is one thing I think about too. Just like, can everyone use Git? Can everyone, you know, or I don't know. Do people get this? Can they just type Markdown? Oh, awesome. Great. Let's do it. So, yeah. Hey, Lee.
Yeah. We can be done with this. That was my
No, I think that's rant. Really good thinking. You know, there's a lot of choices. I mean, are you looking at headless CMSs? Are you shopping? Is that what
you're I'm doing? Really not, but I am fascinated by it from like a just a person who likes to think about front end development, and I've been talking about it forever. And I like this kind of idea of building my front ends and not worrying so much about what CMS I pick, because I'm very interested in structured data and how it's stored and how I access it and how I think about it as a front-end developer. And it's starting to just feel more and more like, this is a good idea. It's a good idea to separate the idea of where I store my data and how I build my front-end. For everybody on earth, no. But for somebody who's like, you know, because I think that tight coupling solves a lot of like workflow issues and stuff, it's actually kind of nice to be able to like, whatever, I'm just going to install WordPress and it's just literally has everything I need to build a website. Do I think there's value in that? Tremendous, massive, incredible value. Yes. But for somebody's like, I don't know, I like want to have this like nimble site that I'm very serious about and I'm going to run for a decade and I'm staking my business on and I want to be innovative and fast and nimble and all this stuff. Like, I think that it's just generally a good idea to split front end and back end. I think it's a good trend. And you can even see WordPress, for example, at least acknowledging it and having enough tooling that if you still want to use that tool, that you're not like trapped in the old, which is why I think it's encouraging to see people use WordPress as a headless CMS, even if that's not what they consider. They're not like a first class citizen of that world. Well, who cares? You know?
Yeah. Well, and I don't, you know, anecdotally, again, there's not backed by huge amounts of data, but I feel like when people have the coupled CMS, like the templates and the, the head or whatever, the head and the body, I don't even know what the difference is. Now I've lost the metaphor, but I feel like when people have those systems and they get big, they start getting hard to work in, sort of like any big project. And people start hating the CMS, right? Like where the CMS and the content, or like the CMS and the view are tied together. People start kind of building animosity towards the CMS, like, ugh, what, you know, and this probably happened to every client I've been at, you know, enterprise or small shop or whatever. You know, people start, they don't like it because, you know, it's hard to work in and then it's hard to update and things like that. But you think about this great decoupling, you know, you have to pay for it up front by hooking everything up and using APIs and probably JavaScript of some kind. But once you have that, like now that, like if you're mad at the CMS, cool, you can just migrate to something else. You know, like you're probably not mad at the CMS. Like you're just, oh, you dropped a pun in there, huh?
I was trying to figure out like animosity. That's when you grow to hate your CMS.
That's a good word. That's a good, that's a blog post. But I think like a lot of people grow to despise their CMS, or they blame a bunch of problems on it. And I think it's kind of fair because it's hard to work in, and there's, you know, it's all tied together, and you break one thing and you do it, and now people can't update the site. Now they're mad at you, or, you know. So I think this great decoupling is awesome. Just because if you want to like add a new post type, that's fine, or content type or whatever they call it, you know, like you just, you just make that, and then you make your new page that can go fetch data from the content type. And it can be dummy data on your local host and no one will ever see it. And then you push it up and then ta-da, it's out, you know, like that's cool. And I don't think people, I don't think it's like, respected enough, but then your content's more portable too. It can go to your iOS app now. It can go to your Android app. It can go to the Watch app, but, you know, like now the data can go other places. So, I've been looking at, so I made an app, Chris, the other week called Prompts. It's a little drawing app, but I have this, I don't really need like a database really right now, but I've thought like, oh, maybe with Coil, I'll like monetize it. If you have a Coil account, you get an account, or like you can log in. You get a login button if you have a Coil account. So, hey, there I go.
Okay. Love it. You did it. Monetization.
I'm gonna monetize. I'm going to get that grant money, man. And then now you can log in, and then, you know, I have to put the data somewhere, like store the image, like, you know, somewhere. Maybe I'm going this way and maybe not, but I would need a data store, you know, and I thought like, oh, maybe Firebase is the easiest thing. Just put a blob up there or whatever, but I don't know yet. But it would be cool if one of these other sites, you know, maybe I do need a CMS and I could really structure my data, you know, rather than just post JSON up, you know, so.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sanity might be worth looking at because you think of it as this JSON store thing, but another thing they do is image storage and manipulation.
See?
So that might be extra cool.
That might be cool to try. Just, I don't know. Because I do, you know, I think of like people authoring. You don't necessarily think of like people drawing and saving a file and that going to a CMS. I'm always like, oh, that's a Rails app with the Postgres and blah, blah, blah. But nope, doesn't have to be. Just has to be a headless CMS somewhere. Something that takes data. Something that says, I'll take your data. That's called Google. That's called Google. It'll take it. Hey,
you mentioned that grant again. I haven't really heard from my particular idea, but I think it's all pending still. It's still a big deal. You know, some people listen to our Making Money. That show did pretty well in Chop Talk land, how to make money online or whatever. And we ended up talking a lot about the Coil thing as a follow up to that. You know, I think if you missed this part of what we were trying to explain is that like, this is an ecosystem that's in its absolute infancy and that you wouldn't pick it up today because you're going to make a bunch of money from it today, or that it's an alternative funding option for it literally today or this week.
Mm-hmm.
Like you might make your $20 or whatever, but that's not, it's like, you should be thinking, you think about it as like the future of monetization and like getting on board on it early and learning about it and thinking about it and integrating the technology and stuff. It's not absolute baby, but it's, you know, toddler days kind of thing. And then if you're ready, that maybe you'll be on the forefront of it later when it becomes a bigger deal. Like it's more players involved, more banks involved, more, you know, it's actually shipped in browsers, perhaps the biggest deal, you know. It's going to be a viable option, I would hope, if we do a good job with all of this later. Today, if you need to make some money today, that's what the grant is for, kind of. That's why that money is sitting there today. If you're like, oh, I'm going to integrate this web monetization into my thing today because I want to be this early player and give feedback and be a part of like shaping its future, they'll give you money to do that via this grant. Like, I feel like I'm a shill for the grant, but I just buy into the philosophy that they're making this ecosystem happen by giving you money through this grant in the early days. And hopefully that's got enough people excited that it pushes momentum to make it a more viable ecosystem later, years down the road kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for cash now, do the grant. Don't like assume that just signing up for Coil and integrating the thing, that's your ticket to money, because it won't be.
I got some data. Do you want some data?
Yeah.
You want some data?
I love data.
So I've had it up for about a month on my site, you know, pretty low traffic. You know, I guess I launched a thing, but then like, and I posted about Coil. So a bunch of people with Coil probably showed up at my site. So I gamed the system, but I made 25 XRP. Okay. That's, that's about $6 US, almost $7 US. It was $7 yesterday. It's $6 today. In that same time, I have some kind of good data here. Let's see. I think I made, I think I made like $11 in ad money. So from my site this month.
It's similar-ish.
It's kind of similar-ish, you know, like $5 is a big deal, but you know, I'm going to assume you're running XR like coil, you probably have an ad blocker installed too, but yeah, like that, like, you know, the gap is not as huge as I maybe anticipated it. So, that's kind of cool to me. I'm not there yet. Obviously I'm not going to be super rich, but that's interesting, right? Like decent data with a decent amount of traffic. So I could probably get you traffic numbers if you wanted that, but
it's interesting. I bet I would have done a lot better if I picked this weird crypto that you use instead of just cash.
Yeah. I mean,
seems like that's the case. Do you sign up for the Brave thing too? The like basic attention tokens?
Yeah. No, I haven't yet, but maybe I should. Cause I mean, that's what's weird about Brave, or maybe what I don't like about Brave. If I'm real like honest, is like, they're like, oh, we'll take money for you. We're your broker now. Like we'll take your money, or we're your escrow account. And it's like, oh, so you've been collecting money on my behalf? Oh yeah, totally. It's fine. And it's like, well, I would like that money. And so you have to,
well, you have to opt into it, don't you? Or no?
Yeah, you have to opt into it. But like, they basically, you know, they like, I don't know. I just feel like it, you know, do I have to sign in the future? Do I have to sign up for every browser or every, you know, wallet or what, you know, just to make money? Like that seems,
Right. And there's, it's not just these two, right? There could be a lot more even.
Yeah. So maybe I'll sign up for Brave and just see. I have Brave on my machine. It's pretty nice, but it's just Chrome. But, I think like, you know, maybe I'll try that or whatever, but I actually have Bitcoin specifically. I still have a bit more, a few ethical concerns. So,
I know what you mean. I just tried to Brave it. The basic attention token thing is one of those logins where you literally can't log in with a password. That you have to be emailed, and then it gives you a link, and then you click the link, and then it logs you in.
Okay.
Which I find, you know, whatever. Like maybe that's just their super secure way of doing things.
Yeah.
But then it has two-factor auth too, and I did that, and it doesn't email me the code. So cool. I'm locked out of that. That's fun.
Good.
Anyway. I was going to compare. I was going to give you my data and see which one is doing better for me. I'm more excited about the one that's pushing to be a web standard, you know?
Yeah.
But I wonder if, you know, Brave seems to be pretty good citizens of the web. So I don't think that their little basic attention token thing is totally incompatible with this. I think it would be compatible with it.
Yeah.
If they wanted it to be, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I had about 14K uniques, 322,000 page views. Most of them are me. So that's what Netlify is saying. So I could check that as well. So
is Dave Rupert's on Netlify now?
Oh, that's Dave cool. Rupert.com's on Netlify, man. I tell you what, it's good. I like it.
That's cool. So you'd get the free analytics. That's great.
Well, $9.
I mean, they're actually, $9. They're literally not free, but I mean free, like, front, there's no JavaScript snippet
JavaScript.
Whatever.
Yeah, I am still paying. I have Fathom, the Get Fathom on there.
That's actually JavaScript loaded, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and that's giving me, like, different numbers, like 8,000 uniques or whatever in the last 4 weeks or whatever.
Lower?
8,000, yeah, compared to
13,000 or something?
Yeah, 13,000. So,
which means that it's blocked JavaScript. You'd think, I mean, there might be technological confusions and issues and things too, but you'd think that the one that doesn't require JavaScript to track the data would be more accurate.
Yeah, 14K versus 8K. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And the page views are way different. So it's like 13,000 page views versus 322,000 page views. Well, yeah, well, I think I could shake people down at Jamstack.conf and see what's going on there. So they did actually reach out to me.
I know in the early days. So, oh, and ask about specifically that. And
then, yeah. They reached out to me and talked to me and actually filed an issue when I was posting like my initial findings, just because it was kind of all over and different. And like the top pages were totally different. And so some of it is probably
bugs. It's
bugs.
Because you think the percentage would be the same, you know?
Right. Percentage would be the same. But some of it, it could also be JavaScript blocking. I mean, just straight up. I mean, I'm a tech blogger. Most tech people have some kind of ad blocker installed.
It's so funny to think of these two analytics products, vastly different results, but most people don't have two. They just have one, and they treat it as this absolute source of truth, only to find that...
literally build their entire businesses on like fallible technology. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay. I don't want to think about that.
Eric Reese lean startup. we got to wrap this up, but did I ever tell you about my lean startup feelings?
No, but do you want to end with that or do you want to? Sure.
Do you want to end? Okay. So I was reading the book. I was like, everyone tells me to read this book. This book's great. Everyone says it's great. I read the book. I start going in and he's like, my startup made $40 million and now I'm a millionaire and I'm so cool. And I was like, oh, well, shoot, I should check out what his startup was. So I go to, let me find it, imvu.net, you know, because it's a .net. It's, no, wait, that's taking me to a spam site. Imvu was his thing, .com. Sorry, everybody. IMVU is like a 3D avatar thing where like you're like 3D avatars in a chat room can like grind with each other. Like they could get a little horny with each other. And I just was like, oh, okay. You mean like it's basically like porn. Like, I mean, it's like this, you know, chat app for kids to have kind of horny and sexed up. And so like, I just was like, that's okay. I mean, anyone can make money doing that. I mean, you just come on. I'm not.
So you're turned off immediately by how he made that money.
Well, like, you know, the whole thing about the lean startup is like, oh, we iterated on ideas and found the right ideas that made money and we chased those ideas, you know? It's like, sure, like anyone can put horny I can put horny avatars on CodePen and man, clicks are gonna go up. You're going to get a different clientele, but man, you get horny dancing avatars on CodePen. Man, you're going to get some revenue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People are going to buy some outfits.
What you're envisioning is like, oh, it was a calendar app. And it turns out that like this feature where people could find each other's, you know, availability on a calendar it seemed cool in development, but people didn't like it. But then we found a UX tweak that was perfect and our revenue went up by 12%. And then we killed our waterfall methodology and shipped our next feature faster and revenue went up by 13%. And then you're like a little more like relatable businessy info is like what you're hoping
maybe
for.
Maybe more business strategy or I don't know, just, not like, yeah, we just made it extra horny and it worked. Like that's it's not a solution. You know what I mean? Like, or like that's not for every, like if QuickBooks suddenly gets super horny, like maybe they'll make more seriously. Money. It doesn't work.
Yeah, we put a bucket that said, if you pay $9.99, we'll show you the nipples. Then of course a bunch of people are going to pay $9.99.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, like not shaming. I don't everyone keep doing what you're doing, but man, that's the impression I got from the book. And so I just was like, I'm going to put this down before I get more mad. But it's weird. It's like an industry standard, you know, it's like, and I'll ask people like who have read it. I'm like, hey, did you ever check out his startup? And they're like, no, I never did. And it's like, yeah. It's just horny 3D avatars grinding it up to each other. So there you go. Cyber sex is quite literally the tool they invented. So anyway, hey. Let's get him on the show. We'll ask him about this. All right, let's power down. Thank you, dear listener, for tuning into this spooky episode of the Shop Talk Show. We really appreciate you downloading this in your podcatcher of your coffin of choice. And then, what else do I say? Oh, follow us on the Twitter. It's a crow that sends you messages. Ooh, and then if you hate your job, curse your boss. But get a new one, really, and go to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one. And Chris, do you have any undead phrases you'd like to say?
On shoptalkshow.com.